This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Former President Donald Trump is indicted again. CBS's Matt Piper with the latest.
A federal grand jury in Washington, D.C. has indicted former President Donald Trump for his actions after losing the 2020 presidential election, including the events surrounding January 6th. Special Counsel Jack Smith has charged Trump with four felony counts.
Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
Former federal prosecutor Scott Frederickson.
His case is based on the premise that this was a president who was determined to stay in power and to do it by spreading lies about the false election, the lies about it being stolen.
Trump is set to be in court Thursday. Matt Piper, CBS News.
The World Meteorological Organization reports July was the hottest month on record. The average global surface air temperature reached 62.5 degrees Fahrenheit in the first 3 weeks of July, breaking previous records set in 2019. Laura Patterson is the WMO's representative to the UN.
This is a glimpse of the new normal. We can expect to see this increasingly likely every year, really.
The man charged in a series of murders on Long Island was in court today but didn't speak. Rex Uhrman pleaded not guilty last month to the murders of three women found on Gilgo Beach and is considered the prime suspect in the death of a fourth victim. CBS's Errol Barnett reports prosecutors today presented their evidence.
The prosecution feels they have an overwhelming amount of evidence, and according to Uhrman's court-appointed lawyer, who hasn't seen any of this evidence yet, he says his client is an innocent man.
COVID-19 makes the rounds this summer, with the CDC reporting weekly hospitalizations are up by more than 10% across the country, the largest percent increase since last December. Vanderbilt University's Dr. William Schaffner.
People who have underlying serious illnesses, people who are pregnant, people who are immunocompromised, those are the folks who ought to take those special precautions. Get your mask out. Wear it if you're traveling, if you're going to indoor group activities.
Pandemic rent protections expire today in Los Angeles. That means some tenants now have to pay back rent from the first 18 months of the pandemic, prompting fears many could be evicted. Steve Berg with the National Alliance to End Homelessness.
These programs worked very well, is what they showed. And if we could learn from that experience and provide help to people to pay rent on an ongoing basis, we would prevent a lot of homelessness from happening.
This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Republican Congressman Tom Tiffany announced today that he will not seek a spot in the U.S. Senate. He'll instead focus on re-election in Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. Tiffany, who is in his second term in the House, represents northern and parts of central Wisconsin. Tiffany said he can make the greatest impact by serving in the House of Representatives. There are no announced Republican candidates to run against Tammy Baldwin in the Senate election next year. Dozens of striking workers at Lightning Google's brewery in Chippewa Falls met with parent company Molson Coors today. Nearly four dozen employees went on strike 3 weeks ago seeking better pay. Molson Coors said it made an offer that was higher than similar union jobs in the area. Some Chippewa Falls bars have stopped serving Lightning Google's as a show of support for the striking workers. The National Weather Service in the Twin Cities says tonight's conditions should be pleasant, but rain chances return tomorrow and later on in the week. From the Civic Media News Desk in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
All right, folks, let's get started. Parents, thanks for coming. As many of you know, I'm Coach Mather. Tonight I want to talk about the season, of which I only have one expectation, that everybody gets stronger. When I say get stronger, I'm not referring solely to physical strength. Sure, we'll be in the weight room, we'll be running stairs, but we're also going to focus on developing mental toughness and grit, because those are the characteristics that allow us to achieve greatness both on and off the court. So, how do we develop those things? By getting comfortable with a challenge, by cultivating the confidence necessary to overcome adversity in all forms. That's why I coach. That's my purpose. Every member of this team can lean on me. and I'll teach them how they can lean on themselves and each other.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a long-time tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Ball.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
News.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Not a great day to be a right-wing commentator. Honestly, not a good day for the folks over at the F channel. Not a good day considering they're being force fed the Kool-Aid, because gotta defend 45, gotta defend the cult, gotta defend all the stuff that you did in 2020. And this is the part that's interesting to me, because when you do stuff, there's accountability, there are consequences. And all of those statements that the Marjorie Three Names and Gun Fetish Barbie and Lindsey Graham and all of them, all of those statements they made about it being a stolen election, now this stuff's coming back up and going to haunt. Because as you know, today, the walls at Mar-a-Lago must be bleeding ketchup as the hamburgers are being thrown in every direction. Because look, another indictment, another set of charges, and not surprising, knew this was coming. The difference in this is, well, there's some other co-conspirators that folks are thinking about. And, yesterday on the program, I couldn't remember Sidney Powell's name, and I can't believe I couldn't remember her, but I'm going, she's got to be one of the people. And they're saying, yeah, quite frankly, she's probably one of the people listed as the co-conspirator. Some are saying Ginny Thomas. Now, this is where the fun and the entertainment and the gamesmanship comes, because this is a good betting opportunity. If democracy is on the brink of destruction, might as well have a little entertainment with it. But they're saying of the co-conspirators being thrown out there, Rudy Giuliani, which I think everyone knows, Sidney Powell, John Eastman, Jeffrey Clark. Those are the names that, quite frankly, I wish they were named. But what this tells me I'm not an attorney by any stretch of the imagination, but I do understand gamesmanship a little bit. This is one of those things where we're not going to slap your name out there directly. We're not going to charge you right yet, but we're going to let you know we got you. We're going to let you know that we got all of this. And what you can do to save your own behind is turn on the former guy. Save your skin. This is a rat alert. The rats are going to be jumping ship. Because look, the only way the Republican Party can purge itself of Trump is, well, the rats coming out and saying what actually happened. And this is one of those moments where there's a chance for the Republican Party to redeem itself. And I know, Mike Pence had his moment. In fact, you know, I love the story. You know, Mike Pence hits Trump hard. And I'm going, wait a minute. What are you talking about? Hits Trump hard. His statement was, today's indictment serves as an important reminder. Anyone who puts himself over the Constitution should never be president of the United States. Our country is more important than one man. Our Constitution is more important than any one man's career. On January 6th, former President Trump demanded that I choose between him and the Constitution. I chose the Constitution, and I always will. After, and this is which wasn't in the statement, but I'm going to add it for him since he seemed to have forgotten it. After consulting with Dan Quayle and another judge to find a little courage and to remind me that, no, the Constitution doesn't allow you to have that power. And what's interesting is there are folks who are kind of giving Pence some credit. You know, he's stealing up the spine. No credit here for Mike Pence. None. You had January 7th. You could have come out and said, hey, they tried to hang me. They did all of this stuff. You could have saved us all of this, but didn't. So no courage points for you. None. Now, I know this is all about he's running for president, not a snowball's chance. Now, this is the third indictment. You got the Manhattan DA. What are there? How many charges are there? Something like 34? 34 charges falsifying business records and all kinds of stuff. The hush money to the porn star. And then there's the first Jack Smith indictment, which I guess was originally 37 felony counts. Now they've bumped that up to 40 felony counts. That could be a lifetime in prison. And now this one, number three, the third one could be the charm. And with these charges, he could face up to 55 years in jail, which, you know, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. But he's charged with conspiracy to defraud the U.S., conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding, and conspiracy against rights. I'm not quite sure what that one is, but that's the least of the, it's like 5 years there. No seditious conspiracy, none of the treason that I was hoping we would see. And I got to think that this is Jack Smith going, again, not a lawyer, just someone who thinks strategically. The big charge, that's going to get met with a lot of appeals and a lot of procedure. Go with the reduced counts because they might be easier to prove. And if the rats do scurry, as I expect that they will, think the former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Haven't heard much out of Mark, have we? And that, you know, kind of thrown out there that, you know, he's probably cooperating. He's probably trying to save his own skin. So a lot of this, I'm sure a lot of this is from the mouth of the former chief of staff. Again, the rats are fleeing. Now, some of the other things that came out of the indictment that I found interesting were, you know, one of the co-conspirators argued that the military could be used to, you know, put down any insurrection. You know, could put down any protest using the, you guessed it, the Insurrection Act. So having an insurrection and then being able to declare martial law and then being able to use the Insurrection Act to put down anyone trying to put down the insurrection. Think about that for a minute. And my mind goes, gee, who could possibly be in a military position, you know, high ranking, you know, general kind of person, you know, maybe someone who served in Congress, maybe someone who had a cell phone that was picked up by the FBI, maybe someone who's my congressman, you know, Scott Perry. Maybe this could be Scott Perry. We don't know. Don't know, but maybe, because it sounds like military background, was eyeball deep in this. He's the guy who brought Jeffrey Clark to the ball, reportedly, allegedly. Sounds, you know, reasonable in crazy land. He is the head of the quote-unquote Freedom Caucus. Sounds right in their wheelhouse. So, again, my mind comes back to, when do we start holding all of these people accountable? Now, this third set of indictments, this, from what I've been reading, is going to be much harder to delay. The documents case is going to be pretty simple to delay that. And we're going to reach out to our legal expert, Renato Mariotti, here later in the week to get his thoughts on this. But it seems to me that this should go rather quickly, especially if the rats are jumping ship. Especially if Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and the rest of them go, hey, got to save my skin. He did it. Because you know that's coming. You know everyone's going to go, he did it. Now, you know, this is where the fun then begins. Because we know Trump is, he's pretty well screwed. And the only thing he can do, and I was talking about this with a friend earlier today, and he's like, well, you know, does he do the Harvey Weinstein or the Paul Manafort where, you know, oh, my health is so bad, and, you know, walking in with an oxygen tank. Do you think he plays this, you know, to the sympathy? And I'm like, no, I don't. It's like all the people who during his administration were saying he's going to resign, you know, he's going to break and all that. No. He is going to go down with the ship, claiming to be the victim every step of the way. And this is where the dangerous part of this comes. Because no matter what happens, and we've seen some polling on this, there is a large percentage of people in this country who don't care what he has done. He is dear leader, and it doesn't matter. And this is where, you know, Fannie Willis, you know, in Georgia telling people around the case there, be careful, make good decisions, don't put yourself in danger, because it could get crazy. And that's what Trump is really hoping, because look, he's already been stoking that kind of fire. He's already been, you know, riling the base up with this kind of, you know, this is what Nazis do. If you didn't see his truths today, that was one of them, you know, comparing Jack Smith and everyone to the Nazis. And generally, when you go Nazi, you're losing the argument. When you're accusing the other person of being the Nazi, when you're the authoritarian, kind of losing that one. But for me, it's about more than just getting Trump. There's so much more to this. And I know everyone wants to see the Orange Menace in an orange jumpsuit. I know everyone wants to see Nectarine Nero, you know, burning down. But I want everybody else. I want the moneyed interests who funded that entire debacle. I want all the members of Congress who were involved in this. My Congressman, Scott Perry, Jim Jordan, who's been stoking this fire, Andy Biggs, Paul Gosar, Marjorie Three Names, Gun Fetish Barbie. You know, even Mo Brooks is surprised they didn't talk to him. Louis Gogo Gohmert, Matt Gaetz, there's a bunch of these people who, well, you know, thank you, January 6th committee, for holding really incredible hearings and bringing all this stuff to light. But it's now time for the DOJ and Jack Smith and the rest of them to start holding people really accountable, because it's the only way, honestly, and this is my true, you know, heart belief. The only way we can move forward as a country and have closure over this period and have some form of good governance going forward is if these people are actually held accountable and publicly tried. Then this can't be one of those things, oh, we're going to do it behind closed doors and we'll have reporters reporting on it. This has got to be televised on every major network. This has got to be more publicized than OJ. In fact, if you want to break out the Bronco and drive Donald, they're fine. If you need to get the ratings, and look, he would love that because for him it's all about ratings, and it would get ratings because, well, people on the left want to see him go down and people on the right want to be angry about the fact that he's being held accountable and what kind of lies are being told about him. And in the process, maybe they find out something like what he actually did and what happened behind the scenes. And that all that stuff we heard during the January 6 hearings actually happened. But here's the funny part in all this. The funny part in all this is still Donald Trump is fleecing the flock. The faithful are sending him huge amounts of money to his super PAC, the Save America PAC. And evidently, you know, someone went through his filings and came, you know, they're covering expenses for, you know, one of the consultants' child support cases. They were spending money on, you know, just all kinds of stuff, you know, all kinds of things. You know, hey, you know, you got expenses, you got stuff, you need a little extra cheese on the Whopper. But the one that's getting the most attention is evidently Melania Trump has a high cost of getting her hair done, because out of the Save America PAC, $108,000 to a hairdresser, to Melania's hairdresser. So, yeah, there you go. Fleecing the flock. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of interest in this. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Frank in Indiana on line one. Frank, how are we doing today? Frank hung up. Look at that. What do you know? I was going to Frank, and Frank just bailed on me. Let's go to line three. We got Alice on three. Alice, how are we doing tonight? What's on your mind?
Okay, so what I wanted to say was, we definitely need to hold these people accountable for a number of reasons, because if we don't, they're going to try it again.
Yep.
The very idea, and nothing, the lunatic parts that aren't believing anything, nothing's going to change their mind. And, you know, as it is now, they're screaming all around, all over Fox News and One American News and the whole nine yards and Facebook and whatnot, that, you know, it's all because it's covering up for Biden's and Hunter Biden. And it's like, my God, people, what part did you miss of, first off, Hunter Biden wasn't involved in the government, isn't involved in the government, and is a private citizen.
Yep.
If you want to go there, go after Trump's kids. And number two, this nonsense of you're going, it was a false flag operation in the FBI and yada, yada. You know, it's just crazy.
Ray Epps. Ray Epps did it. He's a Marine who runs a wedding center in Arizona. That sounds fishy to me. No Marine would run a wedding center.
I'm telling you, it is just totally insane. And watching these people, you know, I'm reading the comments in WAPO section, and you can tell the trolls, the GOPers, and the right-wing nuts and Q-nuts,
yeah,
because their comments are just, you know.
Save your sanity.
Crazy. And
save your sanity,
Facebook,
Alice. Don't read the troll comments. Save your sanity.
Oh, but I like reading them because I giggle. I think they're just stupid. I'm thinking, yeah, who can figure out that, Boris? Or is it Natasha?
Boris.
But anyways, have a good evening, Rick.
There you go. Thanks, Alice. Appreciate the thoughts. No, you don't read the comments. Just don't do it. Let's go line two. We got Julie in Minnesota on two. Julie, how are we doing today? Julie, you there?
Hi. My phone's a little low, Rick, but I'd like to throw out this question to you, Rick.
Hit me.
I just saw a poll today. The president and Donald Trump are running neck and neck in the polls. I'm just wondering what you think, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
I appreciate it. No, this is one of those things that, you know, look, we're a polarized country right now. You know, when you start, when you look at the last election, you know, split down the middle, and masterfully so. I mean, you know, rural versus the urbans, white men versus, you know, black women. I mean, they've figured out how to slice and dice this country up so that they're the predictables. But it's 43% on each side. Those are going to be your lever pulls. And I've said this for years, 5% generally, the 5% of the population generally decides every election. And they are the least informed, least engaged, least active voters in the country. That's how bad our system can be sometimes. The positive in this is as the economy's turning around, as inflation's coming down, as wages are going up, as we're reinvesting in manufacturing, we're seeing all this stuff happening. Those undecideds, that group in the middle, that 14% in the middle, that's where you're going to see them, I think, break. And I read the same poll. It's breaking more towards Biden with those folks who they called none of the above because they don't want either one of them. But when you've got to make the choice, I think they're going to break towards Biden, especially as more of this comes out. But here's my problem in this. 65% of this country is considered working class. 65% of the country gets up every day and punches a clock to put food on the table, to put a roof over their head. And they're struggling, man. And this is where my frustration in all of this is, because we consume this outrage candy media where the biggest issue of the day is Hunter Biden. No. The big issue of the day is children are going to bed hungry. The big issue of the day is workers are dying on the job. The big issue of the day should be, you know, that they're, you know, people my age and a little bit older are, you know, losing their jobs at Yellow Freight and can't retire yet and have no idea what to do. And families are going to be broken because a behemoth corporation screwed them over. You know, we've got so many problems and we get hung up on what's being fed to us, what the billionaire class wants us focused on, which is the daily outrage. I focus on this Trump stuff because it's important. This is our democracy. This is our political system right in front of us being destroyed. This is important. But for me, it comes back to we have better figure out quickly as a working class how to come together. And I think that's happening. You're seeing all of this labor activity. You're seeing all these strikes. You're seeing all of this unrest that's going on because people are tired of working hard, working long hours, struggling to make ends meet, and still falling behind. And at some point, I gotta hope, Julie, at some point that people go, you know, the outrage isn't enough for me anymore. And we're going to start going back to voting on policy. You know, this is one of those weird things because I was just reading an article over at the Times today. In fact, this was part of it. You know, talking about how Biden wasn't getting credit for the economy and the economy's doing really well for some people. And they pointed to DeSantis. They actually quoted him in the article. And he's like, you know, even if inflation is less, you know, prices aren't going down. He goes through this whole thing about how in Florida, you know, you can't buy a house. How the media, how does he say it here? For a middle-class family, affording a home is prohibitive. If you look at the median income compared to the median home price, there's a bigger gap than there was when the financial crisis hit. After the big housing increase of 2006 to 2007, cars have become less affordable. This is a guy who you know, insurance companies are leaving the state because of climate. Houses are gone through the roof. You want to talk about unaffordable. And interestingly enough, Miami-Dade County has just recorded its first population drop since the 1970s. The state now has the highest inflation rate of anywhere in the country, a high cost of living, and oh, by the way, the insurance companies are leaving. That's DeSantis's Florida, but he's going to point the finger at Joe Biden. So for me, at the end of this, it's about standing up, speaking out, and putting down some of this insanity that's being perpetrated by people like DeSantis, who are just outrage merchants. That's it. I want people who are going to get things done. That's why I like Jelly Bucket Joe. Just my thoughts. Want to hear yours? Quick break, right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day National Guard troops in Minneapolis raided Teamsters Local 574 headquarters. Over 150 were arrested, including top strike leaders Bill Brown and the Dunn brothers, who were imprisoned in military stockades. Troops also seized union records and files. They then raided the Central Labor Union and forcing out dozens of area labor leaders. The Teamsters had been battling the trucking bosses and the Citizens Alliance throughout the spring and summer in what would be a turning point for industrial organizing. Finally, drivers agreed to a tentative settlement, but the bosses rejected any deal, refusing to negotiate with Reds. Farmer Labor Party Governor Floyd Olson declared martial law the next day. 4,000 troops arrived, issuing unlimited military permits to scab drivers. By month's end, over 7,500 scab trucks were rolling throughout the city. Local 574 challenged the martial law, demanding that peaceful picketing and open-air meetings be reinstated. They also wanted troops withdrawn from the city, and they wanted all truck movement halted for 48 hours. When Olson rejected these demands, a mass rally was called for the 31st to mobilize strike support. 25,000 turned out to the parade grounds, cheering strike leader Bill Brown, who declared, quote, "The Farmer Labor Party is the best strike-breaking force our union has ever gone up against." Historian Brian Palmer notes, the loudest and longest applause was reserved for Albert Goldman, who thundered, quote, "If we submit without a struggle, then we deserve the fate of submissive slaves. We cannot, we dare not submit. We call upon the workers, organized and unorganized, to clench their fists, shout defiance of the bosses, and struggle until victory or death."
Little known fact, a leading cause of death in Texas is Governor Greg Abbott. Yes, by intentional actions and deliberate inactions, Abbott has used his gubernatorial policies to kill thousands of Texans, including his calculated refusal to extend health care to millions of poor Texans, including nearly a million children. His intentional denial of water breaks for outdoor workers broiling under this year's 100-degree-plus heat dome. His lethal deregulation of utilities, causing the state power grid to collapse for days in the deep freeze of 2021, with hundreds dying for lack of heat and water. And his shameful prioritizing of gun extremism over the lives of schoolchildren. These people are not dying accidentally, but are victims of Abbott's premeditated policies and political ambition. Consider his silly scheme of throwing $9.5 billion of Texas taxpayers' money into the ditch of his highly ballyhooed border security PR show. Grandiosely branded Operation Lone Star, it has posed Generalissimo Abbott as a right-wing border hero. Some hero, he has stretched miles of razor wire underwater in the Rio Grande, slashing the flesh of migrant families and trapping babies and pregnant women in the coils. And Abbott's state troopers have been commanded to shove exhausted and injured refugees back into the river toward Mexico. As one appalled trooper says, "We have stepped over a line into the inhumane." This willful cruelty is made ridiculous by the fact that Abbott's militaristic power play has totally failed to deter migration. After all, these families are fleeing for their lives and future, so he can wrap all of Texas in razor wire and they will still come and find a way in. This is Jim Hightower saying Abbott can kill lots of them, but he can't kill the human spirit.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So President Biden tweeted out a little something, caught my attention. He said, some say America used to be the largest manufacturer in the world, but now we can't compete. He says, I've never believed it. We led the world in manufacturing, and we're doing it again with my Investing in America agenda. And look, this is... And terrestrial radio, I can't really say what I want to say, but I'm going to steal a Bidenism. This is a big freaking deal. It is a big freaking deal that we're reshoring manufacturing and the explosion that has happened in the last year. And here to share some thoughts on just what's being built, where it's happening, and how it's back from a 41-day tour of America, like 8,000 miles in 41 days, to bring us all of the good stuff that's going on in the country. That's why I've asked Scott Paul to come talk with us. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be back on.
It is great to see you. We've missed you. We've missed you, and I'm glad you're back.
Likewise.
So walk me through. What did we see?
Yeah. So, you know, I was really going into this trip. I mean, obviously this was a family trip, but I had a lot of vision going on for the economy as well. And I was pretty blown away by what I saw, I will say. There were major infrastructure projects in every state we went through, and we went through, you know, about 20 of them, at least. And on top of that, traveling through Tennessee, you know, going by sites in Nashville and Memphis where they're standing up new electric vehicle and battery production, which is a big deal, and extraordinary. Passing by Dallas and seeing a semiconductor factory under construction. And then going by Phoenix and seeing a massive new semiconductor facility going up was just stunning. Saw a solar panel facility in San Jose, California. Lots of manufacturing outside of Reno, Nevada. And the list goes on and on and on. But what I noticed, Rick, and I will say this, you know, the infrastructure money is getting out there. I think it's getting out there earlier than a lot of people had thought. And it's good. We need it. Some of this is upgrading bridges that have been, you know, not up to standard for the last decade or so. The factory construction definitely going on. Every factory I stopped by was hiring, which was pretty remarkable. For someone who's been working on these issues a long time, and I know you've been, you know, talking about them, you've been concerned about them for a long time as well. I mean, it truly is an extraordinary moment, in America to have this manufacturing renaissance take place. And look, I'm not going to pretend like there aren't problems. Sure. There will be problems, of course, but we've never had, this much kind of good news in manufacturing for decades and decades and decades, probably since like the 60s, I'm guessing. So it's been a long time.
No, and the important thing here is it's new technology. I mean, you know, it's the green stuff, it's the solar panels, finally cutting some ties with China and saying, you know, we're gonna source this stuff ourselves. And because I've said for years, there was a book written back, I think in the 90s sometime, America, What Went Wrong? Yeah. And, you know, they went through all of these different things, like the rotary dial phone, for instance, just to take that as one of their examples. And there was a plant in Chicago that made the rotary dial phone. And all of those people lost their jobs when they went to the push button phones because they made those overseas. Those jobs didn't stay in that factory.
And we've been losing those kind of things, those technological advancements, we've been losing for 20, 30 years. So it's good to finally see that stuff, you know, staying at home with a president that's saying, hey, buy American is important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's 100% correct. And this is a, and I'm trying to think of the right way to put this, because sometimes it's the business cycle that you're in that's adding a lot of the manufacturing jobs or taking them away, either because we're in a recession,
right,
or we're in a period of growth and we're adding jobs. And the business cycle right now, honestly, isn't like awesome for manufacturing, because consumer spending is going down a little bit. The Fed has hiked up interest rates. So there's a lot of headwinds there. But what we're seeing, and there's been some good reporting on this, is that the public investment, you know, the hundreds of billions of dollars of public investment in the infrastructure, in the semiconductors, in the clean energy manufacturing, is having a tangible impact. And so it's lifting that boat back up, because otherwise manufacturing might be shedding jobs right now were it not for that. And so it is we're getting it right. And I'm not going to pretend like we've learned every lesson, you know, because our trade policy could still use some improvement. I think it's generally headed in the right direction. We got to keep these investments in place. There's a lot of folks who want to get rid of them. And there's a lot of folks who want to undo the Made in America requirements, who want to see climate progress, but they don't care where the stuff is coming from. And so it's, we have some obstacles, but I'm really bullish. I'm really optimistic. And I do say that this president's policies and some of this is that bipartisan support, I think it's worth pointing out, are having a difference for manufacturing.
Right. No, it's finally having a policy. I mean, you know, it's finally saying that we should have some say in which way the economy goes and what kind of jobs we create, instead of having this idea that, oh, the invisible guy with the invisible hands, he's going to do all this stuff. No, it's about actually having an industrial policy that we really haven't had for decades.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, it's a, you know, taking a step back in history, I think, is a little important, because we've been at our best when we've had industrial policy. You think about the interstate highway system. You think about the boosting the space program in the 60s. You think about the arsenal of democracy during World War II. You think about the Transcontinental Railroad. You think about the Hamiltonian policy that kind of moved us away from just simply being an agrarian country into a country that can make things and not have to depend on England or France for all of our goods. And so, you know, when we've gotten this right, we've seen a lot of progress made, and we've seen a lot of progress made for working people during those periods as well. And I think that's important to understand.
Yeah.
And so it is a, we don't take it for granted, but there has been this shift in policy, and I think it's going to be very hard for folks to walk away from it, because a lot of these investments, Rick, are in, some of them are in red states, some of them are in blue states, some of them are in congressional districts of folks who didn't support the president, some of them are. And so you have a hard time explaining why you don't want that solar panel factory or that bus factory or whatever it is that is coming in thanks to the federal investment. You know, and so I think, you know, I think ultimately, obviously, from an economic perspective, this is good for working people. From a political perspective, I think this is good for folks like Joe Biden, who believed in it and who got it across the finish line.
So, you know, in bringing that up, then why are the polls so bad? You know, I was just, again, reading some polling that, you know, saying, you know, hey, Biden's not getting the credit for the economy that I think a lot of people believe he should be getting. That, you know, his polling numbers aren't propped up by the fact that we are reshoring manufacturing, yeah, that they are, that he is, honestly and truthfully, he has kind of turned away from the policies that, as senator, that he was pushing for, you know, the free trade, yeah, and the neoliberalism, yeah, of the past. He's moving us away from. So do you see that the potential that the polling numbers will pop up as people see what you saw, you know, traveling across this country?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that, and particularly, I remember we were in South Dakota, and I went on this trip with my boys, and so they see some things that I don't, and I see some things that they do. But we were talking about the unemployment rate, and I looked it up in South Carolina. South Dakota. It was incredibly low.
It's 1.2%.
What?
It's like 1.2, 1.5%.
It's ridiculously low, yeah. And anybody who wants a job can have one there. The economy is doing great. And then if you pulled that state, they're not going to they're not going to give Biden any credit for this, because if they're watching Fox or if they're getting their news, all it is like the border or Hunter Biden or this or that, and none of it's about the kitchen table issues. But it is I'm the eternal optimist, and I do think that people, get concerned about the economy when it gets closer to the election. But it is a, yeah, I mean, from all the metrics, Rick, this is great. I mean, I don't think the public opinion has caught up with that yet, but in almost any community that you're in around this country, and there are very few exceptions to this, things are good, yeah. In the labor market.
And the policies are spot on. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Scott Paul. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website, if you want to take a look at the incredible work that they do. Because here's the thing, Buy American is not unpopular. I've yet to find anybody who goes, no. I want to buy that cheap plastic crap from China. I've yet to find that. And the fact, there's evidently an executive order about to be signed encouraging U.S. inventions. Invent here, make it here act, I guess, is being introduced at some point. This should be, I think, really popular in the same vein as Buy American. If we're going to have the intellectual entrepreneurial spirit to create, we should probably make it too.
Yeah. Well, again, I think that this stuff will stick when there's more of a focus on economic issues. But this issue in particular is a great example, because for years we had devoted taxpayer dollars to federally funded research at those amazing labs that we have around the country, like Lawrence Livermore or any of these other labs. And there was theoretically a preference for, once there was a patent or something, that the stuff should be made in the United States, but it was easily waived. It was never enforced. And there's all sorts of horror stories about this federally funded research that ends up being manufactured in China or somewhere. And so Senator Tammy Baldwin noticed this in the last Congress. She worked with Rob Portman on a piece of legislation that addressed it in a narrow way because of the legislation that they were attaching it to, a very complex thing. But she offered a bigger bill this time with Senator J.D. Vance, working across the aisle. And Biden said, this is a great idea. In fact, I'm going to sign an executive order that basically does this. And so, he went to a textile factory in Maine, first visit by an American president to a textile factory since, I think, the early 2000s. And signed this, and it's going to have an impact. It means that all those amazing technologies that we're making in these federal labs, that American manufacturers will really have the first shot at getting these out the door and getting these commercialized, which I think is an awesome thing.
No,
and
awesome.
That's going to have like 85-90% support. I mean, who's going to oppose that?
Exactly. No, I mean, and that's it's good policy. It's good politics, but it's good policy. More importantly, it's creating jobs. Let me think of one of those stupid slogans that my right wing friend. Oh, it's America first. Yeah, it's that.
Yes, but for real.
Yeah,
and I think this is the difference. Is that this is not chauvinistic, but there is something to be said for progressive economic nationalism, because America is a better country when we have a strong economy and a strong middle class and the ability to make a lot of the stuff that we need, and then we can lend a helping hand to others.
Yep.
Okay. That's what, and I think that is the vision that we have. the stuff that they talk about is phony. It's fake. And the idea, and this is always the thing that gets me, that there's like some mass of immigrants coming into the country that are stealing all the jobs. This is just not happening. It is not happening. There is, I mean, everybody is all employers are looking for people to work right now. And it's not this chaos. I mean, we went through El Paso and it seemed actually like a normal city, you know, and not like you see it on Fox News. It is crazy stuff. But the real, you know, if you're really going to put America first, you do the Buy America, you invest in manufacturing, yep, you invest in our workers, you make us a truly strong nation and not a nation that fears the other.
I'm right there with you. And finally, I want to bring this up because, look, as we've been talking about, a lot of good things happening, a lot of manufacturing, a lot of jobs being created. But just as bad policy got us into a hole, I think good policy is taking us out of it. Bad policy can rear its ugly head. And, you know, I'm looking at the auto industry and the fact that there's a chance that China is going to start bringing in some autos into the U.S. Are you hearing anything about this? These cheap EVs, these cheap. I remember a couple years ago, they were talking about bringing the Cherries in, which are like $2,000 for a car.
Right.
And who knows what kind of car they were. They probably make the Yugo look luxurious. But have you heard anything on this?
Yeah. Yeah, and look, this is a big concern. And right now, there's a basically a 27.5% tariff on Chinese EVs that are coming in. But even despite that, there are some brands. Polestar is one of them. GM brings in a couple of electric vehicles from, or will be, from China. Tesla is thinking about it. But then the other homegrown Chinese companies, BYD, NIO, they desperately want into the U.S. market because we're going to be a fast-growing market interested in EVs. And, you know, the EV, you know, even though you won't get an EV tax credit for it, you know, they've had so much subsidization in China.
Yeah.
They'll be able to sell these things at cut rate. And for people who aren't interested in an EV pickup truck or SUV, these sedans are going to be very attractive. The problem is, this is going to cost a whopping number of jobs in the United States of America. And we don't have a level playing field. Like, we can't sell these things back into China. And so we got to just say no.
Yeah.
And get ahead of this, because I'm deeply, deeply concerned about this. We can do this, and we should certainly trade with countries that are interested in a level playing field. But the idea of EVs coming from China and the United States, that's something I do not support.
I'm right there with you. But again, the question comes back to, are you a consumer first or are you a worker first? This is one of those issues. A consumer is going, I don't care about anything but the cheapest price I can get. A worker is going, hey, you know, maybe the job that I save by buying this product might be my own.
That's right.
So again, it's a which side are you on kind of moment. But we'll see how this plays out, and hopefully you'll keep us up to date and in tune with what's going on. Scott, well, appreciate the time.
All right, Rick. Right back to you. Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
And good to see you back again from your trip. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. Frank Little, an activist for the Industrial Workers of the World, or Wobblies, was lynched near Butte, Montana. His beaten body was found hung off a railroad trestle. On it was pinned a disturbing note. It read, quote, "Others take notice. First and last warning.
3777LDCSSWT. The numbers were the measurement of a grave. Each letter was the initial of a union organizer. The letter L for Frank Little was circled. The warning was clear. Union organizers leave town or die. Butte was copper mining country, and efforts to unionize the miners had turned the area into a battleground. Frank had arrived that July to help in the efforts to support striking miners. Frank Little was a leader of the IWW with experience organizing free speech campaigns, lumberjacks, and miners. Although not much is known of his early life, it is thought his mother was Cherokee and his father was a Quaker. He organized the wives of the miners to join in the pickets and helped build solidarity between the multiple unions that organized in the area. The Anaconda Mining Company took note of his presence, but could not find a legal means to stop him. Then, early on that fateful day, men came to his boarding house. They claimed they were police officers. They gagged Little and stuffed him into a car. They beat him and drug him through part of town tied to the car bumper. And it was at the county line where they hung Frank Little's body. News of the atrocity spread far and wide. Thousands attended the funeral. Not surprisingly, the authorities never found his murderers. Some doubt they ever tried. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, I use that old labor frame a lot. Yeah, the idea of which side are you on? Are you on the side of, the employer or the side of the worker? It comes down to that kind of a moment when you're looking at the strikes that are going on. There are no in-between moments. Are you on the side of the bosses? Are you on the side of big capital? Or are you on the side of the workers and on the side of labor? It's very simple. Because depending on which side gets the advantage, it could affect you one way or another. And as I've said, about 65% of this country is solidly working class. They get up, they punch a clock, they cash a paycheck, and it never seems to make it to the end of the week. We're all in the same kind of boat. So, you know, when Scott's talking about, you know, these products coming in from China, be it the EVs, be it the Temu stuff, you know, look, it's cheap. It's really cheap. We're going to live like a billionaire with no wages. And, you know, at some point, you know, you have to have a manufacturing base, which, again, I'm thrilled with Joe Biden's doing. I think we're heading in the right direction. But it does come back to that. And what's interesting is, you know, the Reuters had a piece today talking about kind of the same frame of, you know, basically which side are you on in this moment? Because they're saying, look, you've got customers who want, you know, they want what they want. They want it now. They want to be able to swipe their phone, have a product, and it be magically delivered to their door and not cost them anything. And you've got workers who are the ones behind the scenes who are literally being, you know, worked to death. And it's this, which side? You know, is your consumer side beating out your concern for workers? And, you know, what the SAG-AFTRA strike, what this article is talking about, what the SAG-AFTRA strike and the UPS contract fight were talking about was just that. It was giving a behind-the-scenes look at what it takes to deliver that package and get it to your door, what it took to get those films produced and written and to look in the rubber rooms, in the mini rooms of workers being abused and saying, look, we can do better and we should be doing better. And this is why, you know, what UPS was, what the Teamsters were able to do with UPS at this point, a victory, a major victory, doing something on overtime, getting air conditioning into the trucks. You know, there's a lot of stuff there. But it comes back to us. It comes back to we, the working people, deciding which side of this equation are we on. You know, it's like when I go to the supermarket, my kids know. We go to the store, we go to the supermarket, anywhere, and there's a self-checkout. I'm never using it. I'm going to go to the place where there's someone who's there doing it. And this has happened before, where we've gone and we've picked out our stuff at the supermarket, and there's nobody to check you out.
And they go, you have to use the self-checkout. I go, well, then I'm gonna, then you're going to have to put the stuff back because I am not doing it. And you know, then they bring somebody out and they go through this whole process. But we've got to decide, which side are we on in this? Are we on the side of capital making more, or on the side of having jobs for people to make their lives better? And the thing is, as Scott pointed out, there are jobs plentiful in a lot of places, like South Dakota. In fact, so plentiful that people have two, three, four of them.